This is the weekly podcast from the Journal of Neurosurgery. This is the October 24th, 2014 podcast from the Journal of Neurosurgery. My name is Natalie Pynchon, and I will be reading summaries of articles on vascular disorders, oncology, infection, trauma, and the skull base, published today. Increases in microvascular perfusion and tissue oxygenation via pulsed electromagnetic fields in the healthy rat brain. A laboratory investigation by Dennis Bragin and colleagues. Pulsed electromagnetic field treatment, a non-invasive, low-power magnetic field therapy, is cleared by the FDA for postoperative pain and edema. It is also approved by Medicare for treating chronic wounds and has a strong safety profile in clinical use. Its precise mechanisms of action are unknown, but studies suggest anti-inflammatory effects and edema reduction, possibly by improved microvascular perfusion. The effect of pulsed electromagnetic fields on the circulation of the brain has never been studied. The authors of this study used in vivo two-photon laser scanning microscopy to examine the effects of pulsed electromagnetic field treatment on cerebral blood flow and metabolism in the healthy rat. This treatment induced cerebral arteriolodilation with increased capillary blood flow and tissue oxygenation, which persisted for up to 3 hours. The authors asserted that the vasodilatory effect of pulsed electromagnetic fields is at least partly due to nitric oxide production. The nitric oxide synthase inhibitor, L-NAME, completely abolished the vasodilatory effects of the pulsed electromagnetic fields. The authors concluded that in the brain and perhaps in other tissues, pulsed electromagnetic field treatment increases nitric oxide synthesis, which induces vasodilation and enhances microvascular perfusion and tissue oxygenation, and thus wound healing and edema reduction. The authors are currently evaluating the efficacy of pulsed electromagnetic fields in the treatment of acute ischemic stroke and traumatic brain injury. Is local hypoperfusion the reason for transient neurological deficits after STA to MCA bypass for Moyamoya disease? A clinical article by Nitin Mukherjee and co-authors. The ECIC bypass, employed as the treatment of choice for symptomatic Moyamoya disease, is known to increase the vascularity of an ischemic cerebral hemisphere. The incidence of transient neurologic events after an ECIC bypass is variable in different reports, and such deficits are generally attributed to hyperperfusion after the bypass. The evidence for this exists both in the form of immediate intraoperative flow and postoperative imaging data, both of which indicate a markedly increased flow in the ischemic cerebral hemisphere. The author's detailed analysis is based on 64,980 minute-by-minute postoperative flow observations. These observations were recorded on the Hemidex perfusion monitor in 31 patients who underwent an ECIC bypass, 7 of whom developed transient neurologic events. The authors demonstrate a pattern of blood flow that suggests local hypoperfusion, possibly due to competing flows as the cause of the deficit, resulting from impaired autoregulation and fluctuating blood flow. The authors' observations show that episodic local hypoperfusion correlates with clinically observed transient neurologic events. This suggests that blood pressure management, closely guided by real-time perfusion data, may decrease the incidence of these events in these patients. The authors hypothesize that transient neurologic events may be caused by initial hyperperfusion combined with large fluctuations in perfusion, leading to local transient hypoperfusion. Improved preservation of function during acoustic neuroma surgery. A clinical article by Hirofumi Nakatomi and co-workers. Restoration of cranial nerve functions during acoustic neuroma surgery contributes to good outcome. The authors investigated the effects of minimizing the injury period and maximizing the recuperation period among 89 patients who underwent retrosigmoid unilateral acoustic neuroma surgery. The 89 patients were divided into two groups. 23 patients underwent standard treatment and investigation of the monitoring threshold for preservation of function. 66 patients underwent extended recuperation treatment and assessment of its effect on recovery of nerve function. The authors evaluated intraoperative cochlear nerve function by using continuous auditory-evoked dorsal cochlear nucleus action potential monitoring. They evaluated facial nerve function by using facial nerve root exit zone elicited compound muscle action potential monitoring. They analyzed factors affecting preservation of function at the preoperative grade. Same grade preservation of function was associated with both types of final action potential monitoring response and with extended recuperation treatment. Preservation of function was better for patients who underwent extended recuperation treatment. Infections in patients undergoing craniotomy. Risk factors associated with postcraniotomy meningitis. A clinical article by Irene Corbetti and colleagues. This is a study to define the prevalence and bacteriology of infections in a cohort of patients undergoing craniotomy and to clarify the risk factors for postcraniotomy meningitis. The authors prospectively followed patients older than 18 years who underwent craniotomy over a period of 3 years. Traumatic brain injury was the most common cause for craniotomy. About 40% of the patients developed at least one infection, the most common being ventilator-associated pneumonia. Meningitis developed after 16 of 334 craniotomies, and gram-negative pathogens predominated. There was no difference in mortality between patients who developed no infection, patients who developed meningitis, and patients who developed other nosocomial infections. The results of this study are largely confirmatory. No new findings were demonstrated except for the significance of perioperative steroids in the development of meningitis. Use of ventricular drains and cerebrospinal fluid leak were confirmed as risk factors for meningitis. The duration of surgery was not a significant risk factor. The present study being the first prospective surveillance of infections in patients undergoing craniotomy in Greece is important because the offending pathogens and sensitivities for the most prevalent infections were described. The authors believe that this will greatly help physicians with the proper choice of empirical antibiotics in this population. Brainstem arteriovenous malformations, anatomical subtypes, assessment of occlusion in situ technique, and microsurgical results. A clinical article by Seungu Jude Han and co-authors. The surgical management of brainstem arteriovenous malformations might benefit from the definition of anatomical subtypes and refinements of resection techniques. Many brainstem arteriovenous malformations sit extrinsically on pia mater rather than intrinsically in parenchyma, allowing treatment by occluding feeding arteries circumferentially, interrupting draining veins after arteriovenous shunting is eliminated, and leaving the obliterated nidus behind. The authors report here the largest series of brainstem arteriovenous malformations to define 6 subtypes, assess an occlusion in situ technique, and analyze the microsurgical results. Arteriovenous malformations were categorized as 1 of 6 types: anterior midbrain, posterior midbrain, anterior pontine, lateral pontine, anterior medullary, and lateral medullary. During a 15-year period, the authors treated 29 patients with brainstem arteriovenous malformations located in the pons or medulla. The nidus was pile in 26 cases and parenchymal in 3 cases. 23 or 79% of the patients presented with hemorrhage. Brainstem arteriovenous malformations were either resected or occluded in situ. All lateral pontine arteriovenous malformations were resected, and the occlusion in situ rate was highest with anterior pontine arteriovenous malformations. Angiography confirmed complete obliteration in 26 patients. The surgical mortality rate was 6.9%, and the rate of permanent neurological deterioration was 13.8%. At follow-up, good outcomes were observed in 18 patients. The modified Rankin scale scores were unchanged or improved in 21 of the patients. The best outcomes were observed with lateral pontine and lateral medullary arteriovenous malformations. The rate of worsening or death was greatest with posterior midbrain and anterior pontine arteriovenous malformations. Brainstem arteriovenous malformations can be differentiated by their location in the brainstem, midbrain, pons, or medulla, and the surface on which they are based, anterior, posterior, or lateral. Anatomical subtypes can help the neurosurgeon determine how to advise patients, with lateral subtypes being a favorable surgical indication, along with extrinsic pile location and hemorrhagic presentation. Most arteriovenous malformations are dissected with the intention to resect, and occlusion in situ is indicated for those arteriovenous malformations that do not separate cleanly from the brainstem, that penetrate into the parenchyma, or are more anterior, where it is difficult to visualize and preserve perforating arteries, such as in anterior pontine and lateral medullary arteriovenous malformations. Although surgical morbidity is considerable, surgery results in a better obliteration rate than non-operative management and is indicated in highly selected patients with high re-rupture risks. Unplanned readmissions and survival following brain tumor surgery. A clinical article by Holly Ann Dickinson and co-workers. Over the course of the last decade, interest in improving the quality of medical care in this country has exploded, leading to the establishment of measurements for hospital performance. 30-day readmission rates have emerged as one possible proxy, and this study aimed to determine the correlation between 30-day readmission rates and mortality in newly diagnosed glioblastoma patients. The authors found that readmitted patients experienced significantly shorter survival, living only a median of 6.9 months compared to 16 months for non-readmitted patients. Additionally, 70% of readmitted patients had preventable reasons for readmission. The majority of readmissions were a result of neurological or infectious complications, as well as thromboembolic events. While these findings suggest a need for improved surgical management of glioblastoma patients, such as risk assessment in prophylactic planning and augmented discharge care, elimination of adverse events may not be entirely possible. The authors note that these patients are more prone to complications due to extended operation time, complex tumor biology, and clinical disease course. Furthermore, complications that could otherwise be managed on an outpatient basis require readmission due to the sensitivity of this cohort. The authors conclude, however, that although these occurrences may not be completely avoidable, it is important to reduce readmission from both a financial and patient safety standpoint. Clival fractures in a Level 1 trauma center. A clinical article by Alexander Winkler-Schwartz and colleagues. The clivus is the deepest bone of the skull base and is rarely injured. Currently, no system exists that takes into account degree of displacement in clival fractures, or CFs, where minimal fracture movement is liable to damage closely opposing neurovascular structures. This study expands previous CF classifications to include degree of displacement and identifies unique clinical features among CF types to provide a better understanding of the pathogenesis and outcome in these injuries. Admission CT scans obtained in 1,738 patients, representing all cases of skull base fracture admitted to a Level 1 trauma center over a 10-year period, were reviewed. Of these, 65 demonstrated CF. The incidence of CF among all traumatic brain injuries was 1.2%. Unexpectedly, despite having the highest average injury severity score, patients with displaced fractures had the best functional outcomes among CF displacement types, with two-thirds achieving an extended Glasgow Outcome Scale score of at least 6 on follow-up. Lower rates of brainstem hemorrhage in this group raise the possibility that in addition to providing physical support, the clivus may serve to redirect damaging biomechanical forces, mitigating brainstem injury. Currently, this represents the largest cohort of patients with CFs studied. Thank you for listening. To read all the articles published by the Journal of Neurosurgery this week, or to listen to more podcasts, please visit us at thejns.org.